Hi, I'm Patrick, and I'm having a pint of Guinness down in Bridgeport, and you are listening to Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Enjoy that pint in Bridgeport. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 775. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. You can always say hello to us online on Twitter at Outside the Loop, on Facebook, on Instagram, and download the podcast of the show if you don't do so already. It is free. It gets delivered to your device each week. And did I mention it was free? Oh, yeah, it is. Enjoy that podcast and subscribe, too. That way you don't even have to think about it. It just pops up on your device. And check out the website, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com or WGNRadio.com for the audio archives of this show. Bob Ferguson is our engineer today in the WGN Radio studios. Colin Seaman is the producer of the show. And we have a lot that we will cover on the program today. And, you know, I'm sitting here just kind of thinking about where we are in this pandemic. And I know that we're talking about COVID-19 all the time, and the numbers in terms of the cases, look, they're not going in the right direction. And it is amazing to me that we have a vaccine, a few vaccines out, and many of us have taken that vaccine, myself included, but many of us have not. On today's show, we're going to talk about how if you want to go see live music in Chicago, you're going to need to show proof of vaccination in places that are larger, that are smaller. And I'm not talking about a negative COVID test. You need to show that you've been vaccinated. We have a way out of this pandemic, and it's a vaccine. And for all this talk about politics and the government can't do this to me, I don't trust the government, etc., you're going to have to go out on a limb on this one. I don't know what else to tell you, because the alternative is really, really bad. Not only for the person that doesn't get the vaccine, because if that person gets COVID, it's awful. And we're seeing a lot of these hospital beds, especially in the southern region of the country, it's mostly unvaccinated people. But for the rest of us, we have to go through mask mandates. And I know that nobody likes wearing these masks, but because COVID is still here and on the rise, even those who are vaccinated now have to wear masks inside, have to do the social distancing thing. So it's affecting everybody here. And look, I'm not going to sit here and shame anyone or yell at anybody, but there is a way out. It's a vaccine. We need to do our part. We need to get vaccinated. And as we're going to talk about today, you know, a lot of this conversation also centers around economic issues. I don't want to see another shutdown. None of us want to see another shutdown. And we can avoid that. We have the opportunity here in a vaccine that we really all need to come together. We need to take it. We're going to talk to a teacher today. I'm a teacher as well. We're all in masks in school. And it's uncomfortable, but it's necessary now. And heaven forbid there's an outbreak in any of our schools, because we'll be back in remote learning where so many people were complaining about it and critical of it. And it was very difficult to do. So we have a way out. It is the vaccine. I urge you to go get it if you have not already gotten it, or talk to your doctor. Get some honest to goodness real information, not this stuff you're going to find on Facebook or on Twitter or anything like that. Real information, real science. That's what we need. T- telling the stories and preserving the stories of Chicago is important for a more complete and accurate telling of who we are. The Southside Home Movie Project is an initiative to collect, preserve, and exhibit home movies made by residents of Chicago's Southside neighborhoods. Sabrina Craig is the Assistant Director for Public Programming at the Southside Home Movie Project, and she is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Sabrina, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Excited to be here.
So this is a pretty cool initiative here. You are collecting home movies from anyone, really, in Chicago's Southside neighborhoods. Tell us how this whole thing got started.
Well, thanks for that great introduction, by the way. This whole thing got started by Professor Jacqueline Stewart, who's a professor in cinema media studies at University of Chicago, back in 2005, when she was exploring her interest in amateur film, amateur African-American cinema from the early part of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. Not the few films that were being made, you know, commercially, but when film cameras got in the hands of regular folks starting around the 30s or 40s, and folks started making small home movies, documenting their lives. Whatever happened to all those film reels was one of her questions. Where does that incredible visual history of the South Side of Chicago still exist? And she found among her answers that it exists in the basements and the attics and the boxes under beds and storage containers all across the South Side and really across the city. And this valuable and priceless, precious documentation of the history of Chicago was not being preserved and was just sitting around in little film cans because no one has the projectors to watch them anymore, and no one even really knew what was on many of those film reels. So she started reaching out just kind of quietly among friends and families first, but then word spread that she was gathering home movies from Southsiders, and film reels started coming in. People started contacting her saying, I think my aunt has some old home movies. Can I bring those over?
Yeah.
And gradually the collection grew and grew. So now there's over 400 film reels, and they are preserved in a climate-controlled vault at the University of Chicago in the Logan Center for the Arts. So they live there in perpetuity, but they are also digitized. So no longer do you have to pull out an old film projector to watch these amazing home movies, but you can watch them now online. Every single one is digitized and available on our website. So you can scroll through and see images of Chicago from the 30s and 40s all the way up to the 70s and early 80s. There's, block parties, Christmas mornings, graduations, but there's also just, scenes of folks at the beach.
Yeah.
Also a lot of scenes of people traveling, you know, folks didn't just stay in Chicago.
Right.
So there are lots of home movies shot all over the world as Southsiders picked up their cameras and went traveling and then brought back their travel films to share with family and friends.
All right. So we can go online and check that out, sshmp.uchicago.edu. And, you know, in terms of what you're doing here, so someone might hear that and say, oh, okay, cool. You're collecting these home movies, like you say, of graduation parties and birthday parties and travel film and just family life in these Southside Chicago neighborhoods. Why is this important? What story can this tell us about Chicago?
Oh, it's critically important. And that's a question we get a lot. Like, why do I want to watch somebody else's old home movies? You know?
Right, right.
But when you sit down and start watching them, number one, you find that you recognize your own story in the stories that you're watching. You see moments of your own family history. You know, everyone's Christmas looks a little bit the same, but a little bit different. So you can recognize yourself, no matter if you're from the South Side or North Side or not even from Chicago at all. There's a sense of identification and recognition and a kind of universality to these images. And that's really powerful once you start digging in to kind of like see yourself throughout this archive and your own life story. But possibly more important even is the fact that the South Side of Chicago has a unique history. And part of that history was that it was largely written out of the official stories of the city and, you know, of the country. Stories about the Great Migration, stories about, you know, redlining, immigration, the impact of public policies. You can see all of these stories played out in the real lives of people depicted in the films. And this is one of the only places that these histories, the stories of Southsiders, are actually documented through their own eyes. So you see people documenting, you know, house parties or Easter morning, when in this news you might have seen very different images of what was happening in the South Side of Chicago, say in the 60s and 70s. So it fills the blanks in some of the histories of our city and tells an alternate story, a richer story about the lives of people, you know, that were living in our town, you know, long before we got here, and some of them are still here. A lot of the home movie donors are families that still live in the area, or you can see, you know, one of our home movie donors is depicted as the baby that you watch growing up over time. You get to see her as a little girl, and then a grown woman, and you can kind of trace her entire family history through the home movies that she's donated to the collection.
That's really incredible. And I think it's so cool. And again, you know, when we talk about history here, I think it's a really important component to this whole project, the Southside Home Movie Project, in that it's one thing to learn about what happened in the city or in an area from a textbook, or you could even go read primary sources. You could read articles from that time. But it's another thing to see what just daily life was like and how people were getting along and how they were interacting with each other and the things that they were doing. You never see that in a textbook, or you never see that in a primary source. And I think these home movies really tell that story. So it's a more complete telling of our history.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. You see these little intimate moments like family gatherings, baby's first steps, you know, picnics on Rainbow Beach, the kind of things that you would never see documented in any kind of official narrative of the history of Chicago. But it's vibrant and beautiful and abundant in these home movies.
When you look at the collection that you have here, and you said about 400 of these so far, is there a takeaway? Is there something that you've discovered, or some things that you and the folks over at the University of Chicago have discovered from viewing these films?
Oh, so many things. Mike, where to begin? I mean, it's a whole history. I mean, each family that has donated their home movie collection, their entire family history is sometimes represented in these tiny film reels. You know, we're talking like 8mm film reels. The actual film frames are as big as your fingernail, right? So these are tiny little old films, but what they hold is so rich. And the fact that it's not being kind of archived and collected by anyone else makes it feel all the more precious to us. It's also time limited because people switched over to making videos, you know, right around like the early 80s. So our collection really just spans the middle part of the 20th century, kind of like the 30s, right up until about 1982. So it's a little time capsule that you can look back on and see what life was like in the city through the eyes of people who lived here and were living here. And, you know, we say people film what they love. So you can see a lot of affection, a lot of joy, a lot of happiness. People are showing off the things that are important to them. And that's a really critical piece of the history that's important for us to look back on when we talk about where Chicago has come from and where we're headed.
And it humanizes history too. I think, you know, when we talk about history, we're talking about human beings. It's the story of who we are and where we've been, like you say. There's some events coming up tonight and on Thursday. Tell us about what's going on tonight.
Yeah, well, tonight, this is a really cool event organized by the Chicago Humanities Festival. They're focusing on filmmaking on the South Side. It's tonight at 7 in Greater Grand Crossing at the Gary Comer Youth Center. There's going to be folks from not only Southside Home Movie Project, but Sisters in Cinema, the Chicago Southside Film Festival, and a couple other people, Chicago Film Workshop. They're all there talking about the long legacy and really rich future of filmmaking on the South Side. And it's really cool that Southside Home Movie Project is included in a conversation about filmmaking, because when we talk about home movies, we kind of forget, like, everyone who made a home movie was a filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
They were making films about their family. So it's so important to include all of the amateur filmmakers among the, you know, the more the artistic filmmakers that are showing films to be made in to be shown in theaters.
That's great. And there's an event coming up on Thursday as well, right?
Yeah, this is going to be super cool, too, and very different. Thursday, 7 o'clock, this one's a virtual event. It's on YouTube Live. But this is the result of a long collaboration between South Seven Hill Movie Project and Decomposed, which is a Chicago-based chamber music experience that honors Black creativity and culture through the music of Black composers. South Seven Hill Movie Project collaborated with Decomposed, and the members went through the entire home movie collection, pulled out their favorite clips, and then created original soundtracks to accompany these short films that they put together based on the home movies. And they're going to debut this incredibly rich, like, visual sonic experience on YouTube Live this Thursday at 7, and then we're all going to be together in a live conversation afterwards, so you can kind of talk to the members of Decomposed, the cellist and the violist, and talk about their experience of poring over the home movie archive and setting it to music.
We can all check out sshmp.uchicago.edu if you'd like to see the Southside Home Movie Project. Sabrina Craig is the Assistant Director of Public Programming for the Southside Home Movie Project. Sabrina, this is such a cool initiative, and I think it's valuable on so many levels, especially for telling the story of who we are here in Chicago. Thanks so much for talking to us today. I really appreciate it.
It was such a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
Vaccination is how we can beat the COVID-19 pandemic. About half of Chicago right now is fully vaccinated, but if you want to go see live music around town, chances are you'll need to be fully vaccinated and provide proof of vaccination to take in the show. Billy Helmkamp is the owner of a couple of venues in Chicago, The Whistler in Logan Square and Sleeping Village over in Roscoe Village. The Whistler has yet to reopen, but the plan is that it will in the not too distant future. And if you want to go to Sleeping Village, you need to show that proof of vaccination. Billy is here with us on Outside the Loop today to talk all about that. Billy, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. These are crazy times. And so let's talk about Sleeping Village again over on Belmont in Roscoe Village. And you are requiring a proof of vaccination to get inside. Tell us why you decided to go this route with the proof of vaccination.
Well, you know, there's a few different things at play here. You know, we first started requiring proof of vaccination back, I think it was the last week of May when we reopened our indoor space. A lot of it was our staff really led the way on this policy, and you know, it's something I applaud them for. You know, everyone at Sleeping Village is really on the same page about that. You know, part of it is providing a safe space for people and, you know, people feel comfortable. But beyond that, like I said, there's a lot of things at play. You know, as a business owner, I feel a lot more confident in my ability to keep vaccinated people safe at Sleeping Village than I do someone who is not vaccinated. So there's definitely, you know, some safety issues, and it's about protecting people who come through the door. And beyond that, you know, I really hope it does encourage more people in Chicago and elsewhere to get vaccinated, because, you know, the science and the math of everything really point to the fact that that's our road to recovery here.
Yeah. And, you know, the more people that get vaccinated, the better off we are, right? I mean, some people are still pretty hesitant to go into a crowd, but, you know, the science says if everybody's vaccinated in that crowd, you should feel pretty good about going there. So, you know, I thought what you said about taking care of people, that's so important right now. You know, I mean, and refreshing, like, we have to take care of each other, and the way that we take care of each other and thereby taking care of ourselves is to get the vaccine. And I think that is something that we can't emphasize enough here.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just kind of bringing it back to you know, just the math and science of it. My wife's a nurse, and, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what things look like in hospitals right now. And, you know, pretty much across the country right now, if you look at those people with COVID in ICUs, I mean, it's like 97% of the people in ICU have not been vaccinated yet. And, you know, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's in black and white. Get vaccinated. You might get COVID because, let's face it, it's out. It's here. Mm-hmm. It's here to stay. And get vaccinated. If and when you get COVID, your chances of survival are exponentially better. And, you know, it's the smart move.
It is the smart move. Not everyone thinks so, though. I mean, there's a lot of information out there that's wrong. That's just plain and wrong, flat out wrong. And a lot of, you know, rumors and hearsay. And somehow this is now, like everything these days, has become political. Is there any pushback that you're seeing over at Sleeping Village with this vaccination requirement to get in? Anybody pushing back on that?
Not a whole lot, to be honest with you. You'll have some naysayers that do tend to be pretty loud, but put it this way, we get a lot more thank yous than F yous. We've gotten really, like, overwhelmingly positive feedback on this policy. So, you know, I mean, let's face it, also, we're a year and a half into this pandemic, and we know the drill now.
Right.
And it's, listen, requiring proof of vaccination is not some revolutionary concept at this point. You know, you just look to everyone from, like, you know, major Fortune 500 companies to the U.S. military instituting vaccination requirements. And, you know, listen, like, we're on the same side of Dolly Parton. We can't be wrong, right?
There you go. That's a great, you know, mantra to live by. So how has business been overall now that you have this mandate? Are people coming out to Sleeping Village?
Yeah, folks are coming out. You know, our day at Sleeping Village looks much different. You know, visiting Sleeping Village, or, you know, pretty much any other place in the city right now, looks very different, you know, just from the standpoint of, even with vaccination requirements, you know, there are mask mandates. That's something that just happened here in the city of Chicago. So, you know, things look a bit different, but I think folks are trying to move forward in, you know, something that they're familiar with.
Sure. And, you know, another reason to get vaccinated, when we hear folks say, boy, I don't want another shutdown. We can't have another shutdown. It's insane. It's just going to crush the economy. Well, if you don't want another shutdown, we've got a way to avoid that. And that is get vaccinated. I mean, it's, again, something to emphasize what another shutdown would mean for businesses like yours. This would just be catastrophic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. It would be devastating to, you know, not just the concert industry, but so many mom and pop businesses. You know, I don't know how many people and businesses can survive another shutdown, and how many people can go back on unemployment, lose their jobs. It's, you know, I mean, that's really like a doomsday scenario. So that, you know, that's why at this point it's, you know, really trying to bang the drum of encouraging people to get vaccinated. And I'll tell as many people who will listen, go talk to your doctor, go talk to your general practitioner. If you want advice, stay off of Facebook, stay off of Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, any Yahoo can post an opinion on there. Go talk to a doctor, talk to somebody who has made it their life's work to keep you safe and healthy, and listen to them.
Amen to that. Get vaccinated so we can enjoy all of the great cultural amenities that we have here in Chicago. Of course, the concert industry, one of those great cultural amenities. And Billy Helmkamp, the owner of Sleeping Village and the Whistler, the vaccination policy to get in. And I should also add that other venues around Chicago are doing the same thing. And I think it's a wonderful thing Billy, best of luck with everything going forward, and thank you so much for talking to us today.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Out here by the bike racks, it's like total high school because we are at high school outside of Oak Park and River Forest High School in Oak Park. Mike Sofer, history teacher here at OPRF. We work together, but it's nice to be together on the radio again. So nice to see you.
Thanks for having me back.
You bet. So this is so cool. You and I talked in 2019, pre-pandemic. You had developed a class called Holocaust Studies, and you were super excited about it. We were all very excited about it. And you were going to teach it the following school year, and then here we are, pandemic, Zoom classes. And I thought it would be interesting just to check in to see what the experience has been like for you. So here we are, a year out of Holocaust Studies. We're back in person. We're all masked up, but we're back in person. Tell me about the previous year teaching the class. What was that like? What was the experience in Holocaust Studies for you, a class that you developed?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year, I think the 2020 school year was pretty surreal for everyone in education, right? So teachers, administrators, students, it was just an absurd experience. It was really a unique way to teach, and I think it was a very different kind of experience than I had anticipated, obviously. When we last talked, I, you know, didn't see a pandemic coming. But, it, you know, I think that the kids who signed up were kind of knowing that they were signing up for the first year of the class and didn't really know what to expect going in. And I didn't really know what to expect from them. But the level of engagement in that class was like, just, you know, it was, I'll say this, it was really hard to develop, I think, classroom communities in a remote setting. And in the Holocaust Studies classes, the opposite was the case, that there really was kind of a deep connection to one another and to the content. And we didn't cover everything that we wanted to cover necessarily. That's probably always the case. But I was really impressed with the intentionality of the students in the class.
You know, one thing, what you said there in your answer to that question reminds me of what we talked about now almost 2 years ago, and that is empathy. And you spoke of connection, right? And I think that in terms of when we remember the Holocaust, and certainly when you're teaching the Holocaust, right, it's difficult, right? But it's necessary, I think. And to have that sort of connection, that human connection, right, that empathy for what folks went through, I think that's incredibly important. And the fact that you achieve that online, I think, is awesome. So I think this class, you know, just about out of any class, that close-knit sort of empathy, that community, is really necessary.
Yeah, you know, there's this kind of cliche now in Holocaust study circles of the Holocaust didn't happen to 1 to 6 million people. It happened to one person 6 million different times. And so we tried to kind of have that. And so every day we had two families, then we followed their story every day in class. So we do kind of a brief update. And the kids could see how, not just the kind of macro picture we were doing throughout the rest of the curriculum, but what happened to these two small families that were, you know, Jewish families from Poland at the start of the Nazi reign. And we ended class every day spending the last 5 minutes looking at their stories. And I think that was a really powerful experience that kids could kind of see.
There's a school bus pulling up right next to us. We're literally right next to school. This is real. I'm not cutting any of this.
It's wild, too, because we don't even have school buses in our school. genuinely not sure where that's from. But so we ended class every day, and you know, kids, as they saw people surviving, and in one of the stories, these two sisters survive, and they have a third sister who they presume to be murdered, but she has actually escaped. And so kind of towards the end, that sister reaches back out. She's in a different part of Europe, and I could see kids on Zoom on their screen, like, you know, cheering and pumping their fists, finding out that this other character who they had kind of met, and these are real stories, had survived. And, you know, on the last day of the class, I revealed these are my wife's grandparents that were studying. And so, to kind of say, like, a lot of people are carrying these stories, and I think as a country, right, we have a really hard time grappling with the more unsavory and difficult parts of our historical narratives. And to kind of say, like, there are a lot of people who have these stories and have these experiences, and I think that kids really connect it to those individual stories more so than the macro content.
You know, it's interesting again what you're saying there. I think as a history teacher myself. I teach American history. You know, one thing that kids come into the class with is, oh, I want to learn about World War II. I've seen all these movies about World War II and World War II, this and that. But the Holocaust, they're not saying that, right? And I think to your point, like, yeah, it's difficult. It's unsavory. It's really rough. I think there's also a danger there in terms of, like, hey, yeah, World War II and we won. But, like, let's understand what else happened here, right? And we have to keep talking about that. And I think what you're doing is really important to provide that extra context for World War II.
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the other things is that what did that victory mean? For a lot of the survivors, America was closed after the war. It was much easier to get into the United States if you had been an Eastern European Nazi collaborator than if you had been a survivor. And so, one of the other things that we did as it went on was talk about what did kind of surviving mean, and what did American victory mean after 1945? I think it's a really kind of complicated story, and I don't know that students come out of a class like Holocaust Studies with more answers. I think they probably come out with more questions, and that's fine too, right? We have 4 months, and they have the next hopefully 70, 80, 90 years to learn more too.
And as they grow older, they're going into a society. I mean, right now, anti-Semitism is rampant. It has grown, and we've seen it grow over the years recently. Does that ever come up, or do you sort of have that in your mind as you're teaching the class? Like, there are some serious issues right now just outside of the walls of the school when it comes to this anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and honestly, inside of the walls of the school, too. Like, literally, right? We had in I think, the fall of 2018, we had just a slew of swastikas and other anti-Semitic and racist and homophobic graffiti on our school campus. Our second unit is on the history of anti-Semitism. We kind of say that, going into a class like this, that Hitler is going to be one of the main characters, but anti-Semitism is one of the main characters too. And at the end, they had to kind of identify a current manifestation of anti-Semitism and trace the historical roots of the trope or whatever kind of mechanisms of anti-Semitism were involved. And we talk about Holocaust denial. So really, I think it's important to connect it to the present, and give them that kind of sense of not that the Holocaust itself is repeating itself, but a lot of the bigotries that we see in the world, we should be thinking about in the same lens.
And what's, I think, just amazing today, and I mean that in a negative way, is that these bigotries that exist, they're so subtle, or maybe we're so used to them that we don't say, hey, whoa, 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 like, what does that mean? Or what are you doing? A lot of times we let it go or even unknowingly participate in it. And I think, again, why we need a class like this is to understand the roots of this so we could thwart it today.
It's funny because there's this saying, right, never again. And I asked the kids on the first day this year, why you're in this class and what's important, and they said never again. And I said, I'd like to aim a little bit higher. My guess is that very few of you were going to be participants in a genocide. So I'd like to aim higher. I'd like to aim higher than having you not be participants in a genocide, but to think about what are the little ways that you can make other people's lives better, whether it's volunteering with refugees or, it's just at any kind of thing. And you don't have to solve the world's crises, but you need to be, kind of thinking about how you're responsible for other people.
Well, I'm glad you're teaching this class. I know that students have been really interested in it. And just like with everything that we teach, the next year is going to be even better than the year before. At least that's the goal. But Mike Sofer, history teacher at Oak Park and River Forest High School and the creator and teacher of the Holocaust Studies class, it's great checking in with you. We'll do this again. I know you've got all kinds of research that you're doing on this topic, and thanks for all you do, man.
Thank you.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 775 is all wrapped up. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. Have a great week. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.